Welcome to Reality TV, your source for snarky reality TV recaps of all the shows we love and love to hate. From TLC to MTV, A&E to Bravo and more, no show is off limits to the truth as I see it, all from the couch just like you. I'm Jody, your inner voice and best friend who says all the things you're thinking, but you have the manners to never say aloud. Be sure you're subscribed to the show so you never miss a week, and find me everywhere at Reality TV Pod. Support the show and score some amazing perks and merch, as well as some bonus episodes at Patreon.com/RealityTV Pod. Now sit back, it's time to get salty. Hello and welcome back. Welcome to Reality TV as always. Grab yourself a cup of coffee, maybe some speed or something like that. I know I have my cup of coffee right here in a Yeti mug. Got to keep it hot because today I am bringing you a very big show. I have not one, not two, nor three or four. I have five shows for you. 90 Day Fiancé, Happily Ever After, Married at First Sight, a new show on Lifetime from the producers of 90 Day Fiancé and Love After Lockup. It's called Marrying Millions. And then, of course, Love After Lockup and 90 Day Fiancé The Other Way. Now, before we get into all of our business and all of our recaps, I have some news to break to you. No, it is not that I found the curtain hooks. They are still torturing me day and night. But rather, I'm going to ask you to remember way back when I told you I was going to be taking some time off this summer, and then I lied and I never did. Well, this time I am a truth teller. I will be taking 2 weeks off to enjoy the heat and humidity and fresh air, perhaps some sunlight to tan my cellulite and help it camouflage. But don't you fear, my dear Patreon pals. I am going to make sure to drop some of our favorite recaps over on Patreon. That's at patreon.com/realityvpod. I'm not quite sure which of our five shows or all of them. Probably just going to be a poo-poo platter of the best moments of the regular shows over here. Now, if you don't want to miss a thing, head on over and give it a shot. You guys, $1 a month, not a week, a month, gets you ad-free early episodes of this main podcast that you're listening to. It really helps me out. It helps keep my hosting fees paid every month so I can give you this free podcast here every week. And for $5 a month, you get free stickers, those same early ad-free episodes, and 2 to 4 brand new bonus episodes every month. And you have access to well over 80 bonus episodes that are already in recorded. You can pull them up, listen to them whenever you want. They're on everything from true crime. I have some fun guests. I recap other shows, documentaries. Take a peek over on Patreon. You can look through the list, see what you like. I promise you'll find something. This week on Patreon, I have Jess from The Real Housewife of the West Side. Holy shit, you guys. She has such amazing intel and dirt. You probably heard her on Heather McDonald's podcast a while ago. She was a nanny to some celebrities. I mean, she's got details on some of our favorite love-to-hate housewives and so much more. Definitely Patreon-only material. So keep your eyes peeled for that later this week. Again, that's at patreon.com/realityvpod. The link is in the show notes. And you know who is going to hear those episodes first? Christina, a $10 a month patron. She's getting all that and above and a Stay Salty keychain. So Christina, thank you. You are the bright star of the week, but I'm not going to forget our new $5 patrons, Anne Marie, Carrie, Lauren, Leah, Jill, and a mysterious M.E., initials M.E. I'm intrigued. I might have to Google deep dive. Yeah. Love you guys more than Colt loves to Chris Debbie's mole. Wow, there's a lot to unpack in this episode. So let's just get right into it. 90 Day Fiancé, Happily Ever After. You know, I never talk about Ashley and Jay because I could not give any more shits about it. Let's talk about Pedro and Chantel first because Chantel is still freaking pouting and she and Pedro are on their way back to Atlanta. Like, what more do you want from this guy? Yes, I know Pedro is not perfect. Please stop telling me I'm a Pedro apologist. I just like him slightly more than I like Chantel. But you know what would solve this entire problem between the two families besides them just getting off of TV? It would be if Chantel and her family would sit down and actually watch one of the scenes with Pedro and his mom and his sister. If you listen to them, They're saying they want Pedro to stay in the Dominican Republic. They want him to divorce Chantel and be done with her. That's the whole American dollar theory debunked right there. End of story. Let's just close the chapter book on these two. They need to be off the show, as well as Ashley and Jay and our next couple, Russ and Paula. Oh, look, my little Scout Bader Ginsburg, my little puppy. She's wanting to come in because she's tired. And she knows that when I talk about Russ and Paula, I'll be able to just put her right to sleep. It's going to be like a little lullaby. Now, surprise, surprise, Paula is a selfish brat. Yes, she is, isn't she, Scout? And, you know, I'm speaking from experience here. I know for a fact that Paula kept that baby under wraps, like literally under wraps against her boobs so that Russ's mom could not hold him in that moment. I don't think any mom, or I'll just say any mother-in-law, should come over and hug and hover when someone is breastfeeding or whatever it is that Paula was doing under there. It's just personal space. Again, I've kind of been in similar circumstances. However, I do think Paula needs to lighten the fuck up. I mean, Mother Paula, too. She's got a stink face on her. And they're talking about Russ's mom being transparent. They talk out of both sides of their asses. They got the stink face on one hand, and then they turn around and they're all smiles. No wonder Russ's mom is totally confused because she gets mixed messages, too. Now, this holding the baby thing, we all know it's insane. The grandmas did fine holding little, what I was going to call him, Jagger, Axel. To me, it's the same thing. Jagger and Axel, same name. But what about Russ? He was holding the baby. I don't know if it was like water splashed or something in that pot. But all of a sudden, he screams, "Well, I'm doing this all by myself." And then Paula was a bitch right back to his overreaction. And she says, "Well, there's single fathers everywhere." Okay, both of you, slow your roll. They just need to get over themselves about everything. We all know it's not about the pot that he's filling, right? They do this all the time. Both the moms know it, and they don't even live with them. If it's that bad that your in-laws thousands of miles or hundreds of miles away know that you argue all the time, it's bad. Then they go to the beach later, and it was an attempt to be like, oh, we're a happy family, pushing that stroller through the sand. I mean, hand to the forehead, every parent across America, right? Like, what are you doing? Just carry the car seat. You look like an idiot wheeling the whole click and go system. That was insane. Don't miss those days. Anyway, they start talking about it's so wonderful to be together. And then Paula had to throw this comment about it being so hard for her being with Axel all day. Listen, and this goes for both of them. All parents work, whether you're staying at home or you're working out of the house. Parents travel. Every parent sacrifices. No one watching this is going to feel badly for either of you or Paula in particular, who's throwing a pretty elaborate pity party for herself. I mean, the bottom line is no one cares about this couple anymore. It's the same BS every episode, every season. I think they've been on, what, 4 seasons altogether. I think it's time for TLC to say adios once and for all for, I was going to say these two, but now these three. No offense, baby Axel. All right, shall we move on to, let's get into Elizabeth and Andre, because I'm dying to talk about what happened. Holy shit. Okay, now Andre didn't order this car seat in time, so poor little Libby is pissed off, and she has to use one of the hospital rental car seats, okay? I have had to do this when I was a surrogate. My surro dads, they didn't have a car seat. They were here from Spain. They didn't have a car seat to use. The hospital will lend you one until you can go purchase one or get to wherever you need to be. They're clean. The hospital is giving it to you. It's not like they're going to give you some disgusting piece of shit. I get that she was kind of pissed off, probably more so that Andre didn't follow through on what he was supposed to do and order it and get it on time. But here is another question I have for her. Doesn't she have 2 sisters that she could have called up and said, "Hey, can I borrow a car seat?" I know Becky with the good hair, or the other sister, and then the sister-in-law, they each have 2 or 3 kids. Someone had to have had a car seat, but whatever. This is life's way of just checking Elizabeth a little bit. Now let's talk about Father Moldova. Father Andre, Jesus Christ, between Axel and Andre and Father Andre, whatever. Father Moldova would do, right? He's just so fucking cute. Doesn't matter what we call him. It really does make you wonder how Andre turned out to be such a monster. Like, when was that turning point in his life where he went from a cute little cooing baby to just like bam bam on the Flintstones? I mean, was he just a giant sized baby like like Will Ferrell and Elf? Can't you just see him? Like, he is in a massive size wooden cradle. I'm picturing like, oh God, this is so stereotyping. And I know nothing about Moldova, so this is more like a story time reference. I'm picturing like a very cute village in Moldova, a nice brick cottage with like that grass thatching roof. And then inside is giant baby Andre, who just rains terror on his sweet little family and a sweet little village. And then he grows up one day, unlike Elf, where he goes off and the raccoon and Norwal are all wishing him well, whatever. Andre leaves for the big city in Ireland. And then as soon as he gets down the road, it's like the entire village comes out. Everything turns into color like the Wizard of Oz. All the little people come dancing out and wooden shoes. Yeah, I know that's from Denmark. Okay, I'm digging myself into a very deep racist hole. That is not my intention. I'm just trying to say, we should not let my lack of wisdom about Moldova tear us apart. Rather, we should all come together in hating Andre and loving Father Moldova. Now let's talk about Father Libby. Although I question him on his beliefs and his past, definitely his politics, I disagree, but I fucking love him on this show and I'm not going to apologize for that. He has every right to be annoyed and pissed and bitter about never being invited to the home that he helped pay for. He helped them get this house and they haven't even invited him over. And Elizabeth, in her way to manipulate everything and make herself the victim, making it seem like her dad is attacking her for giving her money. Like, he's just, oh, he's throwing these $100 bills at her like razors. Oh, poor Libby. She's such a bitch. And she's like, well, Dad, you don't need an invitation. Oh, like he's just supposed to know he can come over and stop over anytime. Like he'd be welcomed with open Moldovan arms when he knocked on the door. Get the fuck out of here. Elizabeth and Andre owed him an invitation, and they owe him a lot more than that. Besides money and an invitation, maybe a little gratitude, a little graciousness. All together now, let's join hands and scream out together on the count of three, cut the cord. One, two, three, cut the cord. Okay, now I'm just trying to swing this back to talking about Father Moldova leaving because I did not want him to leave. I bet anything that the amount of arguments that they had in that household was dramatically decreased because he was there. Andre was on his best behavior, trying to make his dad seem like he's the victim of Libby's family. They both do the same thing. They're both freaking idiots and they deserve each other. But this man does not deserve to be stuck with a son like Andre. He's so sweet and it's like he's the newborn. He's a sweet little helpless man. I want to sponsor him. I want to sponsor him. I want to sponsor, who is the other parent I wanted to sponsor to come here? I wanted to have a virtual brunch with Clint's mom from Love After Lockup. Someone remind me, I'm sponsoring some other parent, but I will sponsor Father Moldova as well. With the stipulation that Andre's got to go back to Moldova, obviously. Actually, you guys think about that. What if Andre does something kind of like Larissa did or she's going to do, we're going to talk about in a minute, and he had to get sent back? Do you think Elizabeth would follow him? That's a really interesting question. I'm trying to think. I can see Elizabeth staying, actually. I don't think she's going to give up her lifestyle here. Her lifestyle bankrolled by her father, because you know her dad's not going to send her jack shit if she goes there. I don't think she would go. I think she would stay here and maybe go visit him now and then. She ain't moving to Moldova. That's for damn sure. Maybe that's our best bet. Andre does something horrible, hopefully not hurting anyone, and he gets deported. I know it sounds bad, but listen, I'm saying what you're thinking too. All right, let's talk about Colt and Larissa. Ooh. All right, so Colt is a fat piggy and a dirty piggy, and I got all excited because I smelled a crossover. What about a bloody piggy? Yeah, you know Vicky Gumbelson, queen or former queen of The Real Housewives of Orange County? If she were watching this, she would be onto something if she called up Colt. They could capitalize on this piggy empire thing. And what if they called up the barbecue guy from Shark Tank? Remember that little man that Barbara Corcoran just face shamed and said that he was ugly and looked like a pig? It could be like a piggy trifecta. Three little piggies coming back for a comeback. We have Bloody Piggy Cocktail, a barbecue sauce, and what could Colt bring to the table? Chicken breasts? Something like that? All right, more to workshop. Let's talk about it. All right, so there was really nothing from Colt and Larissa until the very end, but it was worth it. This is where we saw the behind-the-scenes foreplay that goes on between Colt and his mom, Debbie. My God, you two, get a room. It was getting hot and heavy. It was like a real-life Dateline episode being played out, and I could not get enough of it. If you look on Instagram or Twitter, I think I might have posted it in the Facebook group or someone else did, I just happened to pause the TV at just the right moment to take my notes, and I looked up, and it was a perfect image on image. Think 1980s when you would go to Olin Mills Portrait Studio and they would do like the profile picture and then like a 50% transparent picture of yourself facing forward or sideways. That is what happened. There is like a sheer picture of Colt staring at Debbie, and then you see Debbie's face being caressed by Colt. It was an accidental moment of photographic genius, if I say so myself. I mean, seeing Colt's buttery fingers holding Debbie's mole oh so tenderly, it is a Dateline episode. Like right after Colty is dead, he stares into his lover's eyes and says, "It's just you and me now, how it should always be." I mean, those come hither eyes to one another, little tum-tums rubbing up against each other, little tummy time, little infant to mother, skin to skin, like the good old days. Am I right, Norman? It was frightening in, oh God, such a good way. I'm not getting turned on, but if I was a freak like that, I definitely would be. Now let's move on to Nicole and Azin, shall we? Before we get into the real nitty-gritty of it, we've got to talk about the state of this home. It is absolutely hoarded. And we gave Nicole a lot of shit for how she lived in her apart motel a few seasons ago, but she clearly learned it from her mom, Robbie. That place is packed end-to-end with crap. Behind Nicole, there's this folding table, and it has those lifts under it. You know, like what college kids they'll get at Bed Bath & Beyond? They're like those plastic, they're almost like rectangular cube cones. They put them under their twin beds so you can store stuff underneath it. Well, Robbie has a set of four of those, but they're holding up a folding table just so she can shove more crap underneath it. White folding table, skinny little metal legs up on these lifts. I mean, practice what you preach, Robbie. If you're telling Nicole that she lives like a slob and you're doing the same thing, you gotta look inward. Maybe the two of you together go on an episode of Hoarders and you call upon our favorite organizers, I'm just saying. All right, moving on. Nicole is buying tickets to Morocco and she's got the money to do it because guess what? I know I'm really giving Robbie a lot of crap this episode. She's been living with Robbie, quote, rent-free so she can save money to buy tickets to go back to Morocco. If Robbie really did this, is that what we call her for short, Robbie? Robba? All right, if Robba really did agree to this, I'm going to be pissed. And I know that her husband, Grandpa Joe, is going to be pissed too. Why would you let her live there rent-free if she is making money in some form? That would be the bare minimum to teach her any sort of responsibility whatsoever. Charge her rent. Stop enabling her. If you're saying that may need structure, maybe that structure needs to start with making Nicole a rent structure. Robbie needs to organize not only her house, but organize her daughter's finances for her because she clearly cannot do it. All right, now I'm just going to jump to it because after Robbie is pressing Nicole on details, there's a little chit chat. Nicole finally relents and admits to what we all knew for a long time. There is no store, but Azin does have a job. Oh, what's that job? Well, I don't have a lot of details. I don't really know. I don't press him on it. But he has a job where he goes fishing every day. Yeah, catfishing. You idiot. So la-di-da, we fast forward just about 10 seconds. We didn't even get that many details out of her because TLC was like, oh, fuck it. Here's what happened. Red screen of doom, not even a black screen, red screen. So, you know, shit went down. 2 weeks later, Nicole canceled the tickets and she hasn't gone back to Morocco. That a girl, May. Way to use your iPad for good. Hacked into Travelocity to get yourself a little roaming gnome and saved your mom's life and bank account. Good job, girl. You got it. We knew you were smart. All right, stick around and we'll be back with a little Married at First Sight. I have been all about trying new things for my body and my skin lately, especially CBD. So many of you in the Facebook group gave me great brands to try out, and now I have one for you. Last week, I tried Kino Skincare. Don't you wish you could be in Hawaii right now? Well, you can get pretty darn close. Kino means body in the Hawaiian language, and culturally, the people of Hawaii respect the reciprocal relationship between the earth and people, and this is the whole idea behind Kino Skincare. Combine scientifically proven, high-quality ingredients to provide your body with everything it needs. CBD is actually rich in vitamins A, D, and E. It increases blood flow, reduces inflammation, and this in turn aids in anti-aging, which we are all looking for. Now, if you're like me and have combination skin, you need the anti-aging plus a little help with acne. And CBD actually helps stabilize oil production, which is what clogs your pores. Kino is different than most brands, though. Their products contain 500 milligrams of CBD. It's non-toxic, cruelty-free, paraben-free, gluten-free, and vegan. Kino skincare experts formulated their products with specific needs in mind, not just a general one-fits-most concept. They use ingredients like coffee seed oil, almond oil, kukui seed oil, and aloe. Every ingredient that can be organically sourced is. And if I may be so bold, the kukui nut body lotion may just be the best lotion I've ever tried. Think white gardenia, but fresh, not too florally. You smell like you just walked out of a spa, and you feel like it too. Plus, you can feel even better because $1 from every order is donated to Sustainable Coastlines Hawaii. It's Kino's way of giving back to the land that they source their products from. Right now, Kino Skincare is offering listeners of Reality TV Podcast 20% off your order. Just go to shopkino.com and use promo code REALITV at checkout. That's shopkino, spelled KINO.com, and use promo code REALITV, REALITV at checkout. That's shopkino.com. Use promo code REALITV to save 20% off your order.
Fans, I am very curious to see what you think about this season and these couples so far. I was really digging it, and I don't know whether it's me being bored with the whole honeymoon phase or if it's the couples. I definitely am bored by Iris and Keith. I think Keith is just too cool for Iris. Iris is kind of dorky, immature. Keith is laid back and cool. It's not a great mix for TV. Let's talk about Mr. and Mrs. Seinfeld. That is Elizabeth and Jamie. We find out that they had sex and Jamie slipped out and I love you. And I mean a literal slip. Did anyone else spy the tub? I'm telling you, tub of Vaseline next to the bed. Ugh. Yeah, not making this up. I mean, you could have at least hidden it. Gross. It also would have been wise to maybe zoom out a little from that bed. We get it. We don't need to be in bed with them. That whole scene could have been cut out completely. We already got it in their little, God, I was going to say their headshots, but oh God. I feel like that's a perverted thing to say, but maybe it's not. That just shows you how naive I am. Anyhow, they're zooming in on these two who are naked in bed. I don't want to know that Jamie wears a giant gold watch in bed. That grossed me out more than seeing like his doughy little man tummy in his boobs. I'm not body shaming him. I just don't want to see his body. I don't like seeing my body in the mirror either. It's nothing against his body. I just don't need to see the whole thing. I think it's weird that the watch stays on his wrist even when he's naked. Like, wouldn't that be cumbersome when you're sleeping, this big metal cuff on your wrist? Am I the only one that takes off jewelry? Actually, I know that. I just went to get my rings cleaned and whatever. Okay, long story short. I said, oh, I take my rings off when I sleep. And the lady's like, oh, that's why they're in such good condition. I didn't realize that was like a rare thing to do. Did you know that? It's not common to take your rings and your jewelry and everything off when you sleep. I don't do it, so maybe I'm the weird one. But I definitely thought the giant gold watch was a bit much. And so is me talking about it for a minute straight. All right, Amber and Matt, I was very interested to see that Amber has a weird tattoo placement. She has one on her butt cheek. You saw it when they were snorkeling. I guess if I had an ass like that and not a pancake ass, I would have one too. But she has this other one that is in an upside down arc shape, like a bowl shape, and it's on her lower part of her abs, like where my fupa is. That's where she has a tattoo. Now, if she's not going to have kids, I think she should go for it. But I think if someone is planning to have children, that's a real risky spot. I mean, that thing, it may look like a bowl shape now, but it's going to be a maze later. Throwing some stretch marks in there, shit. I hope for her sake she has some fantastic skin elasticity. Now, Deanna and Greg. Ugh. Deanna starts off saying she's not a morning person. Do you think she's a noon or night person? Because she always seems put out. No talking in the morning, no compliments ever. I mean, my God, what a delight. Who wouldn't want to marry this ray of sunshine? And I think Greg is coming off boring too, but the more that he talks or the more opportunity he's given to respond to a few words that Deanna might say, he's coming around. I think he's got a really good sense of humor. And if he were matched with someone who, I don't know, enjoys cracking a smile now and then, he would really be a real delight. I think he seems like a really good guy. I just think Deanna's low energy level is bringing him down too, which the two of them together, they're real boring. Oh, and I also hated Deanna's butterfly hat. It looked like she was like 78. Now this catamaran ride. Let's go to that because this is like the big climax of the episode. I was picturing a catamaran like what Iris and Keith were on. And I was understanding what Elizabeth's fears might be because I am not a fan of deep water. I don't like open water. So you put me on anything like a jet ski, a canoe, a kayak, I will get a full-blown panic attack. And I'm not exaggerating at all. Quick story. My mom and I went to Cancun when I was like 16 or 17, like a mom-daughter trip. And she booked this little mini boat excursion thing where it's two people, you're in a little tiny boat and you all zoom out in a line and then you go snorkeling. Well, we showed up late, so we had to like put pedal to the metal, and it was a rough day at sea, as I tell you. And I was crying, sobbing. All the Mexican guides were laughing their asses off at me. And I was terrified. We got out there. I jumped in the water. I saw one fish swim by me in my snorkel and I was like, boom, done. And the guy had to like pull me up dead body weight, my fat against the boat, like just pulling me in, get me out of the freaking water. That was it. I'm never going back in. So all this to say, I understand the fear of open water, but we get to this catamaran and it's a fucking pontoon boat. And to verify my knowledge, I took to pontoonpedia.com. It's a real thing. And it turns out it's all about vernacular. You can go and look at it. A catamaran, the pontoon is part of the boat or vice versa, whatever. The thing to me is a pontoon or close enough to it. And I can fucking get down on a pontoon. A pontoon to me is like what a yacht is to a real housewife. Like I am living like a fucking baller, a pontoon baller. So she was a big fat wuss, but the boat was rocking. I mean, the captain was a total asshole because if you go back and watch, there's this other catamaran slash pontoon in the background and it's moving, but at a much slower speed and they're not going speedboat style like this captain was. So maybe Elizabeth annoyed the crew enough that they were like, oh yeah, let's show this drama queen back there how we can really floor it. And the captain did. Now, later on this island that they go to, this deserted island, Greg gets a boner, so he's got to go in the water. Keith loses his ring for a hot second, and then they all head back. Total snooze fest on the island there. Oh, besides the fact that Elizabeth was laying on top of Jamie, maybe he had a boner too, and he is staring straight down into her boobs, which I think are fake, and I'm not dissing it. I'm just saying I'm jealous. Like, my boobs are about that size, but they would not be sitting atop my chest if I was laying like that. They would have been under Jamie's arms, like not even mine. They would have been hanging low. They probably would have been down in the sand looking for Keith's ring along with everyone else. All right, so they're back on the boat, and okay, the water did end up being choppy. You could see Amber was feeling it, but she was not, you know, drawing all the attention to herself. But Elizabeth was. She turns on the drama. She gets all snippy with Jamie, and he was trying to keep her calm. I don't think he said it in a dick kind of way. He's not going to get all worked up because that's only going to work her up more. He was just playing it cool. That is not going to do for Elizabeth, though. So she gets back to the dock, storms away, and I come back from the commercial break thinking, oh, we're going to see some big fight. No, nothing. So I rewind. I'm like, what did I miss? No, somehow, I don't know if it was like the crew met their work time limit for the day or something, but we see nothing of what happened. That's why we're watching this show. We want to see people argue. We want to see perfectly happy people, married people argue. God, that sounds terrible. But you know what I'm saying? Like, if you're going to build us up to watching this big scene and then all of a sudden, oh, no, fast forward the next morning and they're kissing, drinking coffee. I don't want to see that shit. I did actually enjoy one scene between Deanna and Greg. The only time I've ever enjoyed anything between these two because they're pretty damn boring. And that was Deanna's reaction to Greg having been engaged before. She was so shocked with this news that Greg was engaged before. Her body language was all about her, though. Like, she was almost offended, personally offended that Greg would have been in a relationship at all before her. I mean, it's not like the guy was breaking it to her that he was married for 10 years, he's got some kids back home, or maybe he's still legally married. It was such a strong reaction, and maybe it was the editing. But her facial expressions were a lot. And I know that I have very extreme facial expressions. Thank God that podcasts don't show faces because that's kind of, I don't know, that's what everyone knows me for is I have crazy facial expressions. So I understand Deanna not being able to hide it, but maybe try just a little bit just to take the sting off of the reaction. All right, now then there's some ambiguous misunderstanding between Amber and Matt and about her supporting him, whether it's financially or emotionally, it was stupid. But what I did see was the monster that lives within Amber because Amber puts a pillow on the floor. I repeat, a bed pillow on the floor. Evidently, she did not get the floor is lava memo. Let's spread the word, hashtag floor is lava. Okay, moving on to our next show. It comes on right after Married at First Sight. It's called Marrying Millions. It's from the producers of 90 Day Fiancé and Love After Lockup. I don't know how I feel about this show. I think this might be, I don't know, one of those shows that you watch, but you're doing something else at the same time. Like maybe you're playing Candy Crush. Maybe you're, I don't know, looking for your next snack, refilling your wine glass, that sort of thing. It's not one where you have to see every moment, like a 90 Day Fiancé or something like that. But I gave it a shot, so we're going to dive into it. The premise of the show is that there's going to be six couples altogether. We didn't get to meet all of them in this episode. But one person in each couple is a millionaire, hence the name Millions. And the other person is just an average Joe, an average income or less. Now, the first couple we meet is Brianna and Bill. Bill is 60 and Brianna is 21. They live in Dallas. Bill is a real estate developer. And he says he's known as a player. I am going to officially rebrand him. He is now known as Billy Wonka. He's got this creepy striped suit, a very creepy glare. He's the guy in the commercials that you see that has like a lob, a really wavy, grown out lob, orange teeth. Honestly, his teeth were orange. There was one scene where there was a label or something in the background and it was orange and his teeth matched. It was like a green screen kind of match thing going on. And just like the real Willy Wonka, Billy Wonka also has a passion for bringing children into his home. So truly the name fits. This guy is disgusting. And it's not only because he's way older than this really sweet, beautiful, I almost said little girl, young woman, Brianna. He's controlling. I mean, of course he is. He wears embroidered shirts that are unbuttoned down to his navel, lots of chakra beads and necklaces, the thin chains. You can see it, right? Maybe he can use them to go meditate with, center himself with a woman his age. These two met at a Mexican restaurant where Brianna worked. She was the hostess. He came in, saw her, decided, I need to have her. And he continued to go like every day to hound her. And he said that he would go to the bar area and just stare at her. Sounds like a real gentleman, someone who's really after her heart. Now, then there's this scene where they go out to dinner with Bill's friends. I'd say there were maybe, oh, let's see, one, two, three, maybe like four couples. All of them were older guys with younger women, except one of these couples. And that woman looked like Adrienne Maloof, level face with the shit-stirring skills of, let's say, a Tamara Barney Judge, if that gives you an idea. So this woman is across the table, asks Brianna how old she is, and she responds, I'm 21. And this woman kind of goes off, I'm not going to say necessarily on Brianna, but on Bill, saying, I think this is inappropriate. She's very young. And I really felt bad for Brianna in that moment. I mean, how is she supposed to stick up for herself at this table of older people, probably older, powerful people in the social scene? I felt terrible for her. If someone were to go after my daughter or my niece or my friend like that, I wouldn't come out swinging because in real life, I'm a total wuss, but I would talk behind their backs a lot. But here's Bill's reaction. Instead of sticking up for her in the moment and talking to his friends, he goes over to Brianna, who has left the table, and he says to her, she's just saying that because she's old and jealous that you're young and beautiful, and she's not. I mean, what a great boyfriend and a great friend, right? I mean, you know that's exactly what he's going to be saying about you, Brianna, as soon as you age 2 years, as soon as the earliest signs of crow's feet set in, he's going to be talking shit about you too. I hope this friend of his, this Adrienne Maloof friend, I hope she really takes him to task on this and tells him exactly what she thinks of his ugly ass face and his orange teeth. This guy's such a dick. Okay, now let's talk about Shanti of Las Vegas. The reason I'm saying that kind of questioning is because it took me at least half the episode just to try to figure out her name. And finally, we see it's Shentile. It's spelled C-H-E-N-T-I-L-E. I thought they were saying Jaunty or Shanti, but it's Shentile, Gentile. It's very Petitfleur from Real Housewives of Melbourne. Anyhow, Shanti is a successful real estate broker. She makes millions, and she is dating this guy named Brian from Minnesota. Yeah, they didn't even need to tell us that. You could tell by Brian's accent and his striking resemblance to a Hanna-Barbera cartoon that he was from Minnesota, don't you know? Or maybe it's not Hanna-Barbera. Maybe it's like what Buzz Lightyear would look like if he took his helmet off, or like a G.I. Joe or Buzz Lightyear action doll, and you would like push his face a little bit just to flatten it out. That's Brian. Now, red flags for me went off immediately as soon as Brian said that their first date was at her house. They very quickly breezed over that. I think that might be Shentile, Gentile's, God damn it, she's got a freaking weird name. I think that's what her problem is. I think by having someone over to your home who you know is not as financially successful as you, he's a carpenter or something, she's got to be trying to establish dominance or something by doing that. Her house is insane. Like, we're not talking, you know, a $2 million house in LA, I hear, is like a teardown. This place is, well, it was much nicer than Yolanda Hadid's Lemon Grove. I'm trying to think of, like a Kyle Richards Palm Desert house kind of feel. And I'm going to say that it goes both ways, whether it's man inviting a woman over to their mansion or vice versa. Well, it may not be the smartest way to determine if someone is truly interested in you or interested in what you can provide, but it's too late at this point. They've been dating now 6 months, and here is another even bigger red flag. 6 months they've been together, but she has no idea where he lives. She's never been to his home. She doesn't even know a general location or a town. However, she said she's ready to get married and she wants to have children with him. She wants to start a family. What the fuck? I mean, there's so many steps between hi, nice to meet you. Let's have some dates at my million-dollar mansion and let's get married and have kids. Well, maybe there really isn't so many steps. There's not many, so many steps for Brian, but there should be some more steps in between for Gentil. We'll see what happens throughout the season. All right, our next couple, Rosie and Drew. This chick, it's like she's playing Elizabeth Shue in Adventures in Babysitting. He walked up to me and he asked me if I wanted to dance, except she annoys the shit out of me, and I love Elizabeth Shue in that movie. Now, there's this whole mystery going on about how Rosie and Drew met. I'm assuming it's like a seekingarrangement.com or sugar daddy situation, right? I mean, what else could it be? Whatever. It doesn't matter to me because these two actually seem like they like each other. They seem in love. I'm sure Rosie is caught up in whatever it is that he can provide, and that's adding to her honeymoon phase of falling in love. But I mean, look, they are into each other. Go for it. They also kind of look like each other. So, you know, maybe they get married and they have identical looking children of different ages. I'm all for these two. Now, Katie and her caveman boyfriend. Ooh, where do I start? All right. Well, Katie is the ex-wife of Josh Hamilton. People who are into baseball probably know who he is. She's 37, she has four daughters, and she also has the face of a 53-year-old. I'm sorry, I have to say it. She's a beautiful woman, but she has got to stop. She's only 37. I was shocked. I thought late 40s for sure with a lot of work. There's just so much Restylane and Botox and whatever else in her face. She's turning herself into like Vicki Gumbelson's, like her second face, Vicky's second of three faces. And her hair, it's like shades of gray and lavender and white. It's 37 shades of gray. She's 37 years old. It's got some yellow, some white because of really bad extensions. Obviously, she's trying to fix herself externally because there's a lot going on internally, which probably why she's involved with this guy named Colton, spelled with a K, in case you didn't catch that. He is 23, and he's the exact doppelganger for Brendan Fraser in Encino Man. You remember that movie? Dirty, curly brown hair. He's a total dork. He's not even cool. But I think Katie thinks he's cool and he's hot just because he's young. They might just be the perfect match for each other. I don't know. I just think it's really shitty that you're dating your daughter's friend. I really think she just work on maybe dissolving some of those fillers and dissolving some of the mistrust that she has with her daughter now, because her daughter is really pissed off. And that kind of betrayal, I think, not that I've experienced this, you guys have met my mom on the Patreon episodes. I think that sort of betrayal or hiding things between a family, especially a mother and a daughter, that's like some lifelong damage right there. And now I'm just sounding like Oprah. Maybe Oprah needs to take a little visit to Love After Lockup. Let's jump right into it, shall we? Let's start out with, oh, Meghan, Michael, and Sarah. We found out last week that Meghan kissed Mike's friend, Rock. It's Rock like the skincare, R-O-C, not like Do You Smell What the Rock Is Cooking, who is so fucking hot, especially when he sings in Moana. Now, Mike is in the dumps because he feels like Meghan is such a snake and she's so sneaky. He's pouting and screaming and he's calling up his friend all pissed off, which is an awfully big reaction coming from the guy who cheated on his wife. We talked about this before. And also, he's wearing this coat. I don't know if this is the style now with the youngins, with the millennials. This fur trim that is on this coat looks like Trump's last weave that he had taken off. Like it has been through the Air Force One helicopter machine. It's all matted up. He needs to take a look in the mirror and check himself. You look like crap. You are a weasel of a man. You're a snake of a man. So stop talking about Meghan. She may have done the wrong thing, but he's done basically everything wrong in his life. But, you know, he needs an ego boost. So what's he going to do? He's going to ring up Sarah, his wife, soon to be ex-wife, because he wants her to just spill her heart out and say, yes, I want you to be here for the birth of our baby. I need you. I want you. But Sarah has wizened up. And I'm not a fan of Sarah, but she was right. You don't wait until the last second to ask your parole officer if you can go for the birth of your child when you've known for what, at least 6 months, you were going to have a baby during that time period, especially if she's going to be induced, you know the exact day and the exact time. So to pull this shit the day of and say, I'm going to run over and try to make it, that is such bullshit. I probably would have gone into spontaneous labor. I'm almost going to spontaneous labor now, and I'm not even close to pregnant. It would be like an immaculate conception, I'll tell you that. So now we have Megan and Sarah pissed off, and now mother and sister Michael are beyond angry because he is about to break house arrest. This is where I have zero sympathy for Michael. Like, I don't think he has any percentage of empathy in his body. He's going to put his wife and his children through this shit. He's going to put Megan through this shit, which doesn't matter at this point. Megan should have moved on. He's married. But now his mom and his sister, they've done nothing wrong in this, but they're having to deal with the consequences of Michael's shit all the time, in and out of the house. And for you to just not care about them after they've been through all of that, they're there to drop you off the jail, pick you up, deal with your baby mama and girlfriend shit. Fuck Michael. He's such an idiot. Whatever karma comes around, he absolutely deserves it. Okay, let's talk about Scott from Oxnard. We'll go to the beach, right? Lighten it up a little bit, the snowfall in Flint to the beach. True story, I had no idea where Oxnard, California was, and had I known that it was near a beach, maybe I would have planned a visit there. Now, this pains me to admit, right away in the scene, I had to pause. I had to reach out to you guys on social media because I needed a moment. There are times during my podcasting journey where I come face to face with things that make me learn about myself, and watching this episode with Lizzie was one of them. You guys, Lizzie and I have the same swimsuit cover up. Yep, it happened. I would like to think that I was the first one to purchase it. It's neither here nor there. It's happened. But we have similar tastes. I don't know how that makes me feel, except gutted inside. I'm going to need some time to process that because I never would have thought that I would share the same taste with someone who wears a bikini with peace signs on the boobs. But I will take any support that you have. Any consolation will be greatly appreciated. But I just wanted to defend myself a little bit. The swimsuit cover-up was from the Target Summer 2019 collection. It's very cute. It has little flamingos on it. And it has a nice little ribbon detail on the back. All right, please forgive me. Moving on. Lizzie is a raging hypocrite. Let's break this down here. She's pissed off that Scott was having Charlene at the house. He was helping her out. You would think she would be very supportive of Scott supporting his friends because that's exactly what drew her to Scott. He was helping Lizzie with $80,000 and she was just his friend. You remember that? She didn't want to sleep with him or marry him or even touch him, God forbid. They're friends. She's a sociopath and a pathological liar. I don't even like watching their scene because I'm telling you, I've said it a million times, she's going to snap one day. She's going to be back in prison. I guarantee it. Let's fast forward to the beach very quickly. Scott has something to give her. I'm praying that it's the potty ring. I think that would be the ultimate karma. He went back into that toilet where he flushed down the toilet, reached down there, and he's going to give her a big old shitty diamond ring because that's exactly what she deserves. Okay, let's talk about another gift that was given, Andrea and Lamar. Lamar is back with a bouquet of beautiful flowers. I saw some hydrangeas in there. Big fan of hydrangeas. Turns out he left her the night before, but he's back to apologize. I'm guessing the night before was that delicious taco dinner that he had last week. They didn't really describe that too much, but that's what I'm assuming. Now, although I love hydrangeas, I am not a huge fan of forgiveness flowers, but the mistletoe cracked my ass up. Lamar is funny. I didn't realize how funny he was. Like, he made me full on chortle, if you will. I loved it. The fact that he just ripped off some twigs and tied them together with duct tape, I was cracking up. I can see why Andrea is charmed by him. Brittany and Marcelino. Like I said last week, I don't like talking about Brittany and Marcelino at all because I don't like talking about Sasha's case. I know that Starcasm has really tried to set the story straight on what Brittany is putting out there. Brittany is saying the person who shot the one or two people who were killed in this home invasion thing that Sasha was involved in, that they got no time and that they were set free. Sarcasm says not so much, although I don't know. I don't want to get involved with it. It's just tragic all around. People died, and I can't imagine the pain that is going through the victims' families watching this. It's almost like they're being victimized again, having to humanize a person who took their... Okay, let's just move on. It's tragic. Let's talk about Clint and Tracy. Lighten things up a bit with, you know, some crackheads. Clint, he is worse than Tracy at this point. He's right up there with her. He pulls up to drop Tracy off. I have my hands over my head at this point because I can't even believe how stupid he is. He pulls up to Village Hall or the courthouse, wherever he's dropping Tracy off, and it's clearly a loading zone, a no parking zone. He gets out of the car, parks it, and starts walking in with Tracy. I was crossing my fingers like, please, dear God, let a cop pull up and just make Clint burst into spontaneous flames. Like, he is so anxious at this point. He's twitching for his next fix, or maybe he's twitching for advice from his dad. Okay. So he's dropping Tracy off. She's going to get off probation, parole, whatever the hell that is. He goes to Kendall's kitchen to pick up his check so he can cash it to get crack. I mean, use it for Vegas. And he also needs advice from his dad. Clint starts asking him how he got through those marital ups and downs, those good times and bad with his mom. He starts comparing his and Tracy's marriage, you know, with drug use, prison sentences, everything else that they may or may not be doing, with his mom and dad maintaining a business, building a beautiful home, raising a shit show of a son. I mean, it's no wonder his dad hates him. Kendall can't even bring himself to move his mouth when he speaks to Clint. He is clutching his jaws and tensing up his lips. He cannot stand his son, and it's so evident. Oh my God, this poor guy. In his place of business, no less, around his briskets. He could give no brisket fucks. He gives zero briskets to Clint and Tracy. He better not, because I bet those briskets are worth a pretty penny. Anyhow, Clint ends up asking more advice, especially about the secret he's been keeping from Tracy. And the secret is, he's been talking to someone on social media. Ooh, well, what do you think Kendall's going to advise? Oh, probably the common sense thing, like tell Tracy and then work through it. What extraordinary advice. And I'm not dissing Kendall. That was like the bare minimum advice he could give because he wanted him to get the hell out of there. So jump to the airport, which looks eerily abandoned. Clint is waiting for Tracy, and when she arrives, she is twitching more than I am in a hotel room, which I haven't yet luminoled and disinfected yet. I mean, she cannot keep herself still, and they keep cheersing and drinking champagne out of these plastic stemless glasses, not stemless, like the bottom base of it is missing. He had picked him up. He probably stole them from Kendall's kitchen, actually. I was going to say Party City, but come on. Clint's not going to waste his crack money at Party City. He's going to steal from his dad. So then they show her freedom papers and drag along an empty suitcase into the airport. And I'm just assuming that they probably smoked or snorted all of the crack that was in that suitcase at one time, or maybe just making room for all the drugs that they're going to bring back illegally to Hobbs, New Mexico. See, I'm such an optimist, always looking on the bright side of things. All right, stick around after the break. We're going to wrap up the show with the one and only 90 Day Fiancé The Other Way. It's story time. The first time I had to fill a birth control prescription was when I was 16. I'd just been diagnosed with ovarian cyst after a very embarrassing ER visit. That's a whole other story. But I went to G&G Pharmacy. Actually, John and Jim Belushi's mom worked there. I handed the male pharmacist my prescription. And at the time, you can imagine, I just wanted to get the damn pills, get out of there. It was so embarrassing. So my name gets called loudly for the whole store to hear, of course, followed by the pharmacist barking at me that my prescription was not covered by insurance and I was going to have to pay full price. I remember going home, telling my mom about it, and she was on the phone with insurance, furious over the time, energy, and money being wasted for my very necessary prescription. Now, thankfully, we have Simple Health now. Where the hell were you guys when an awkward teen Jody needed you, Simple Health? Although most insurance plans cover birth control now, over 19 million women lack reasonable access to contraceptives, and one-third of us are using it inconsistently to save money. That's unacceptable, it's unfair, and it's unnecessary. Simple Health is all about making birth control simple, convenient, and affordable, with online prescriptions and free home delivery. No more waiting in the pharmacy, driving over to pick it up every month, calling into your doctor to make sure that you get your refills. That ordeal is over, ladies. Whether it's you or maybe your daughter is brand new to birth control and you're looking to make things easier with a prescription that you love, trust me, Simple Health is the way to go. You just fill out an online health profile, a doctor reviews it, and then you pick the birth control you want, or the doctor can recommend one for you. Your birth control ships to your door monthly. It's free with most insurance plans and starts at just $15 a month without. Not a fan of the pill? Simple Health can prescribe you the patch or the ring. Now, although Simple Health is not a replacement for routine checkups with your doctor, they want to work with you and your team to find the best birth control for you. Of course, Simple Health wants you to get your regular paps and exams, but those visits aren't required to obtain birth control. Be in charge of your own health in a world that's dictated by insurance plans. Again, you can use your insurance with Simple Health, and birth control is free with most insurance plans. Without insurance, pills start at just $15 a month and delivery is free for everyone. The annual prescription fee is $20, but you, my lucky listeners, get to try Simple Health for free. Just go to simplehealth.com/realitv or enter realitv at checkout. That's R-E-A-L-I-T-V. Again, that's simplehealth.com/realitv or just enter realitv at checkout. I mean, see, Simple Health even makes the website easy. One more time, simplehealth.com, code realitv. This week on 90 Day Fiancé, we really witnessed something unique, something special, something only seen once in a lifetime, and that is the love story between Jenny and Sameet. I think we need to take a moment here and just feel the love all around. Take our breath away, indeed. He certainly took my breath away. He almost took the life and breath out of the man at the other table who was making fun of Jenny. I love him. I freaking love Sameet. Not only is he standing up for his woman, he's standing up for his country. He's standing up for the Department of Tourism. He's such a stand-up guy. He loves his Jenny more than Forrest Gump loves his Jenny, more than any man on the face of this earth loves their woman. And I also love his friends. Who knew a man's best friend is not his dog, rather his friend who is quite fond of a sweater vest? I'm wondering if sweater vest is dating. I don't think he is. He seems very dedicated to his job and his family. But when he marries someone someday, she is going to get a catch. That guy is absolutely fantastic. And I started thinking about it. He's very comfortable on TV. I think the producers of Married at First Sight should give him a little tap on the shoulder, because I think we all know some experts who need a little switcho changeo boot out the door. Let's get friend Sameet in there. Now, we don't find out this week if Sameet and Jenny can get married after all. I thought we were going to get a little bit of an answer. We're going to have to wait until Sameet figures out how to intercept this marriage certificate thing that's being sent to his parents' house. It could be that the guy at the certificate office was whispering so softly that I missed something. So if I did, let me know. But what song am I going to have to play next week for these two? Maybe a little Super Freak? All right, let's talk about Tiffany and Ronald. They were kind of a snooze this week. Their day after the bachelor party, and Ronald comes clean about this stripper. It really was a funny moment because he's trying to soften the blow and say, my friends had this friend, she's a woman, she arrived. I think she was there to, I don't know, do some business or something. She came in, said hello. I sat down, then the next thing I knew, she was like naked or something. Her breasts were in my face. It was really business casual attire for everyone, so it was no big deal. Yeah, Tiffany was not having any of it. I was very surprised how quickly she was able to shut down the cameras, though. It just took her a little, nope, I'm not talking about it, and they didn't even question her. Think about what would happen if Nicole of Nicole and Azin had done that. They freaking hounded her through the trailer park to try to find her. They got her mom trying to trace her scent like a canine dog, but Tiffany, all she has to say is, I'm not talking about it, and then there we go, they're fine. And by the way, before I move on from them, because that's all we got, we found out that Tiffany had a baby. Yeah, she must have been pregnant like right away, right? She just had a daughter. I think her name's like Carly Rose, something like that. So, maybe we'll have a little pregnancy surprise at the end of the season or at a tell-all. I guess Mazel Tov. Okay, moving on to Corey and Evelyn. How freaking adorable is Evelyn's grandma? She looks exactly like Mama Coco from the movie Coco. And I'm not saying that just because she is from Latin America. Like, she really does look like Mama Coco. She has these beautiful, kind eyes. Really, she looks great for her age. Probably the most beautiful elder we've had on this show. And now that I'm saying that, I always say that about Robalee because I think Robalee is very pretty. But Mama Coco and those kind eyes, I mean, that's what makes her beautiful to One Direction and me. All right. So, I know what I was going to say. I think I figured out what Evelyn is doing with Corey right now. You know how she's like really mean and then she's sweet and then she's very domineering with him and then very affectionate and giving him kisses and says he's cute. And then, you know, she might make him sleep alone by himself in a strange home and then choose his pet and witness its slaughter. Close enough. That's basically what happened. Pick a chicken and then go see something happen to it. I know it was killed, but I'm not going to watch that. I'm a spoiled American. My food comes from a very hygienic, sanitized freezer. That's where everything comes from, right? It doesn't come from Jesus or God or the earth. It comes from a white space that's been sanitized using a UV light and maybe a little sprinkle of cancer in there. But back to Evelyn. So I think she's just trying to do some Jedi mind trick, like a Dharma initiative. Remember that series Lost, where you didn't know who are your enemies, who are your lovers? There's dying animals, just like the chicken. You had to hunt for your own food. And where the fuck is Walt? Where the fuck is Engelbobble or wherever the hell she lives? Yeah, Evelyn knows where the hatch is. She wants to trick Corey into going down some Ecuadorian hatch hole and she's going to open up her bar. That's the whole game, I think. All right, so let's segue this somehow into Corey. Maybe Corey does know where the hatch is as well, and he knows it with his black magic. Oh my God, this poor guy. I actually thought it was kind of hilarious. He does this trick. There's probably, 25 people in the room, and then all of a sudden, boom, everyone clears out, and he was so dejected. He had high spirits. I am going to just win this crowd over. Her family is going to be flocking to me to learn magic, but no. They were like doing signs of the cross. They're about to do an exorcism. It was terrible. I felt horrible for them. And that's saying a lot because I hate magicians. I have had nothing but bad experiences. Don't ask me. Or maybe I talked about it on my Patreon, but I don't do magic. I don't do magicians. It's not because I don't believe in it. I just think 99.9% of magicians are really fucking weird and creepy. Jahoon and Devin, this is just the light turn that we need. Jahoon's parents are stars now. Twitter was going nuts. If you don't follow 90 Day Fiancé on Twitter during the show, you should. Actually, maybe that's what I'll do when I'm taking my time off during the next couple weeks. I'll make sure that I'm on Twitter or something like that. But people were going crazy for these two, and I totally understand it. They're like real-life cartoon characters or emojis. They have hearts in their eyes at all times for Las Vegas, for their son who they love. Not so much Drusilla, but listen, they love Jahoon so much and they're being so supportive for him, hoping that they also support their digestive system, maybe a little probiotic after all that bacon. But all in all, it seems to be going pretty damn well at this point, or as well as it could be. Seems a little strange, though, with Drusilla's illness all of a sudden. She gets sick overnight, so Devin's mom flies in and takes her home. Sounds a little fishy to me, but I'm not going to make a joke about Drusilla being home by herself, talking to May over FaceTime while they both raise themselves. I'm not going to do that. I never, ever would do something like that. Now, later over ginormous burgers, did you see the width and girth on those things? My God, even I couldn't get my big old fat mouth around those. But Devin musters up enough courage to ask Jehoon's parents, did they approve of the marriage? Now, I do not know what kind of bullshit bait and switch editing TLC is doing, but the previews, even right before that commercial break, had Father Jehoon saying, I don't believe it. I don't believe it, when he's asking, does Devin truly love Jehoon? But in actuality, he welcomes her with open arms and says, welcome to the family. What the hell was that? I don't even think he said the line, I don't believe it. They didn't even show what context that phrase was said in. Maybe it's just that silly TLC Hamily playing tricks on us. Okay, for real, it was actually kind of cute. I agree with Mother Jehoon that Devin just needs to crack a smile now and then, maybe stand up to receive the hugs that they are very graciously giving you, maybe give a little hug back. Devin, I don't think that she is a bad person. I think she's a nice person. I think she's a decent human being. There's just something off about her. I can't put my finger on it. I don't think it's necessarily that she is immature. Maybe she just hasn't been exposed to much or how socialization works. Something is off there. I don't know. Just can't figure it out. If you've got it figured out, let me know because it's driving me nuts. All right, no Paul and Karini this week. Thank God. Now we can talk about my favorite of all, Laura. I love her. She was glowing in that pastel pink. Not many women can pull that pastel off, especially if they have light blonde hair. You can look really washed out, but she looked great. It's just too bad Aladdin was a huge fucking asshole. He didn't even realize what a stunner he has, right? He just looks at her and goes, huh, like a, almost like Santa Claus, you know, he's patting his belly to insinuate that she's gained weight. Excuse me? You haven't seen her for 6 months, and after you hug her, that's the first thing that you notice. Maybe go wax some more cheek hair off and your hairy balls while you're at it. He's such a freaking dick. He thinks he's so smooth. He's that guy that he thinks no matter what he says is funny or he's sexy. I wonder if women in Qatar find him attractive. I suppose if you're just seeing a photo of him, you would be like, oh, that's an attractive guy. But maybe he doesn't have a girlfriend there because as soon as he opens his mouth, he's just very punchable. All right, speaking of a punchable moment, he brings all of his friends to the airport. Now, I thought, well, not very long, for a short amount of time, but very hard on this. I don't know what his intention would be with that other than using his friends as a barrier between he and Laura. I mean, obviously, he wanted them to meet her and then he could find out what their opinion of her is. But something is strange about that. Think about if you were to be picking up your wife or your husband at the airport. Wouldn't you want that moment to be just a private thing or maybe one good friend that you have in common, but not a whole group of new people? I thought that was really a strange move. Or maybe I'm just assuming the worst out of him. Actually, the worst thing about him would be having to do him jiggy jiggy style or doing the jiggy jiggy with him. I think I speak for every woman on the planet when I say we will never ever want to do any jigging after referring to sex as jiggy jiggy. I mean, not only do I think immediately, of course, of Lisa Vanderpump's dog with alopecia, but it reminds me of the guy on The Simpsons. Doesn't he say like giggity giggity or something like that? It's just very like high school, maybe even middle schoolish, just chills up my spine. Gross. And then Laura, she's already in physical pain, emotional pain, and then the shoes. Laura, your feet are tired because you've been traveling. I get it. But you need to size up. You could tell those booties were way too tight. And who wears booties, first of all, when you're on a long flight like that? Laura, let's just have a little chat. Her son, Liam, who So doppelganger for Danielle would have even told her the same thing. Wear something comfortable, put on some gym shoes, and relax. Not booties. But maybe that's her way of getting back at Aladdin for having to jiggy-jiggy with him. Wearing boots, sans socks, mind you. Did you see that? When Aladdin pulled off her boot, there was not a sock to be seen. 17 plus hours and a Band-Aid wrapped around a bunion on her big toe. All that just festering away in a faux leather booty. Oh, that's going to be right up there with Jiggy McHairy Balls ball sex. Oh, God, I just made myself gag. There you go. That's what she's been cooking up for him. That's what she's been planning for their big night together. And I can't think of anyone else who deserves a nasty fungal foot infection more. Not her, of course. I meant Aladdin. All right, well, moving right along, you guys. Remember, I'm going to be taking a two-week break, but that does not include Patreon. If you want to sign up, remember, go to patreon.com/realityvpod. Amanda and I on Total Request Podcast this week. We are going to be breaking down I Love Money, and I already know what the next episode is. I'll give you a hint. It's a show that I have never kept up with, nor do I plan on keeping up with it in the future. That is going to be coming up next week. Again, that is Total Request Podcast with Amanda from Amanda Loves to Hate Teen Mom, and you can find that at patreon.com/AmandaAndJody. And Moms on the Rocks, brand new episode coming out this Friday. I'm giving Carrie a little quiz on 90s and early 2000s trivia. It's going to be a blast from the past. It's going to be pretty damn good. So check that out. That's Moms on the Rocks on your favorite podcast app. Thank you guys so much. Enjoy the last couple weeks of July. And don't forget to keep up on the new shows that are going to be coming up. I think we have a Before the 90 Days that's going to be starting after these two tell-all weeks. And also Unexpected, I believe, is premiering on TLC. So keep your eyes peeled and make sure that you keep up with me on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter. Let's talk about what's going on. I will miss you until next time. And as always, stay salty.